I guess we can go right now to our food maven. That is Arthur Schwartz, who joins us every Monday live. We broadcast it, of course, on the weekends and on Tuesday, just after the noon hour, as a matter of fact. So, ladies and gentlemen, with further ado, here he is, Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Good morning. And it's cold, and it's still winter, even though it's spring.
Yeah.
Flowers are up, and I'm sort of in a winter mode.
Yeah. Well, we have snow. We have snow flurries here, so you know.
I know. Well, it was. I was scared because 2-3 years ago, I don't remember. Time goes so fast. There was a frost exactly now, just as the magnolias were about to burst, and there were no magnolias. So it only got down to 34 degrees here in Brooklyn. So that I'm okay. We're okay. The magnolias are okay.
All right.
And I'm prepared. what I mean is, I don't know. I'm doing a major overhaul over here, and in the midst of all this, I decided I needed comfort because food for me is comfort. Both I realized. Think about it. It's both the cooking of it and the eating of it.
Yeah.
But the thought of eating it motivates me to cook it. And then once I get into it, I find it, you know, the process rather zen. But I've been yearning, no better word, to make a old-fashioned, and I mean Italian-American, yeah, some people in Italy would do it too, kind of meat sauce, ragu, made with spare ribs. And there were these great-looking spare ribs in the case the other day, and I said, okay, it'll give me an excuse to sit in the kitchen and rest my back from all the schlepping and lifting, etc., that I've been doing. Well, I could do a little of that in between. It was a good balance of lifting and schlepping with sitting by my ragu. So as Giancarlo Francescone, the queen of Neapolitan cooking, dead about 20 years now, at least. Yeah, 20 years. As she said, when you make a ragu, which requires hours and hours of simmering, get a good book, sit by the pot, but don't make it such a good book that you forget to stir the pot every 15, 20 minutes. So that's what I did, except that instead of reading a book, I schlepped stuff. You know, the eating of this is it only took one day to make, but it's taking 3 days to consume. So that's not a bad
no.
Investment, right?
No, that's a good investment.
Yeah. So, and it's the plainest of plain. This sauce I made the other day is not strictly Italian American, because I cook with enough Italian-American grandmas, and I'm a grandpa age myself, so you can imagine that a lot of them from the old country. But when they came to the new country, ingredients were different. Some things were more abundant, other things not. And the American thing, not just among Italians, but of other ethnicities and national descent, we add a lot of stuff to what was at one time an impoverished, simple, beautiful cooking. So I made the simplest possible ragu the other day, but if I was an old Italian grandma who didn't really like the taste of the tomatoes she could buy here, and maybe, you know, that's why the Italians started putting up their own tomatoes. Footnote, get back to that later. You know, you added garlic and onion, where at home maybe you only had the onion. And you added oregano and parsley, and you had every meat in the book. And that was Sunday gravy, called Sunday gravy. I made simple. Start out with a little over 2 pounds of pork spare ribs. not the expensive baby backs, not plain old pork spare ribs. There, these days, there's so many different spare ribs in the case. You just want the plain old spare ribs. Sometimes they're on sale and you can buy a whole rack for practically nothing. But the other day in the supermarket, they had them, these really nice ones, already cut up. So I didn't even have to do that. And they were at a very reasonable price. So it was a little over 2 pounds. I put that into a big pot, meaning a pot that where most of them will fit in one layer. Maybe there'll be a couple or so that aren't quite there. But this is not French cooking. So they don't have to, the goal here is not to make everything beautifully brown. It's just to start the cooking and to get some color on them, but not like you would if you were making a stew. So this is ragu. And then, so over medium-high heat, I turned and these ribs in just a tiny bit of olive oil to skim the bottom of the pot so they didn't stick. And it took about 10 minutes using tongs, turning them, blah, blah, blah. And then I added one medium onion, not a large onion, a 6-ounce onion, diced. I added that to the pot, and then I continued to cook it a few more minutes until the onion wilted very nicely. And then I added about 2/3 of a cup of red wine. I happen to have that much in the bottle on my counter. You could use a half a cup. You could leave the wine out altogether if you really, really want, but I don't see why you would want unless you just didn't have any in the house. And anyway, a half a cup would be fine. And by the way, if you have some leftover white wine somewhere, you can use that instead of the red wine. And let the wine, whichever, cook until it's totally or almost totally evaporated. And then I added 2 cans of San Marzano tomatoes. I poured them into a bowl first, and I mash mine up these days with a potato masher, but you could use your hands to crush them in the bowl. That's good, too. And add them to the pot with all the puree. These days, these tomatoes come with puree. People ask me about draining tomatoes because back when I wrote Naples at Table 20-some-odd years ago, didn't have such good tomatoes in the market. The best tomatoes came packed in juice, and you did have to drain them, because if you didn't drain them, you'd be cooking your tomato sauce forever to evaporate this juice. But these days, they come packed in puree, even, domestic tomatoes, red pack, comes packed in puree. And then pour that into a pot. I rinse out my can, so I do add some water. I rinse out the cans with some water to get all the flavor out of the cans. Sometimes at the end you're going to add a little water, too. It depends on how bubbly, how simmering you keep the sauce. And you stir that in, some salt and pepper to start. I would say a teaspoon of salt and maybe not even the pepper at this point. Forget the pepper. We'll do it later. No herbs. It's just meat, onion, tomatoes, and you let that simmer for minimum 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and a half. I have friends in Naples who would say that's only semi-ragu, that you need to cook it 4 or 5 hours. These days, I like a tiny bit of freshness, and 2.5 hours is plenty for me. These spare ribs will have rendered quite a lot of fat, makes the sauce so velvety, it's delicious fat, and the meat will be falling off the bones. So the first night, you eat the meat, or if it's a big feast day kind of thing, you could eat the meat and the sauce in the same day, but I pretty much serve the meat with sauce clinging to it and vegetables. And then you have enormous amounts of really dense meat sauce with the, you know, it's got that fat in it. And that'll stay in the fridge for, well, you know, a week. But I would freeze it, and I have. We had it on pasta one night, and then I froze the rest of it in two portions. So that's for us who eat a lot. That was 3 days, three big meals. I mean, there's no meat involved anymore because we ate the meat. Pardon me?
I was just going to say, how long will what you froze, how long will you keep
that? Oh, months.
Okay.
Months. Fact is, we get, you know, as the weather gets warmer, I'm not going to want to eat this very much. I prefer to have a real tomato sauce, meaning no meat. And that's a very briefly cooked sauce. But I want to point out that the word ragu, R-A-G-U, really means meat sauce. It doesn't mean the ground meat sauce of Bologna, a bolognese. It doesn't, not specifically. It means any meat sauce. And if it's not a tomato-based meat sauce, it's just tomatoes without the meat, then it's sauce. Not ragu. It's not so-called gravy. Grandma's gravy, mama's gravy, is made with meat.
Now, how did they get the name ragu on the marinara sauce? Because you would figure that would have been
marinara sauce is something totally different.
Yeah, but the name ragu is.
Are you talking about the brand name ragu?
Yeah, I mean that you would figure that ragu has been around a long time that you wouldn't be able to make that a brand name.
Well, it's spelled differently.
Well, why not?
I don't know.
I grew up with ragu, so it's as old as me. I don't know how old it is. Up, Jill.
We wanted to trademark Robin Hood, we couldn't. We had a
really?
We could trademark Robin Hood Radio, what our image is, but we couldn't.
We could trademark RobinHoodRadio.com, actually. Yeah. But yeah. Otherwise, because Robin Hood's in the public. But the problem is,
ragu would be in the public domain.
No, because it's a word. Couldn't. We had trouble. The reason we got into difficulty.
We're talking 1920 something.
But also, ragu is a word. It, you know, it's the French is R-A-G-O-U-T, and ragu is become the pasta. It's, you know, it's an Italian word.
Hmm. Yeah. Right.
So
it just means meat sauce.
You can't trademark words. As our problem with Robin Hood Radio was you couldn't trademark.
Didn't Trump try to trademark? You're fired. And he couldn't.
Did he? What's this?
He did. He did years
ago. Yeah, he did. He tried and he couldn't. I don't know why he couldn't, but I'm glad he couldn't. So yeah, you can make ragu with any meat. So my next yearning, my new word, is to make a ragu with lamb. Now, up in the mountain, and goats. A goat ragu is sensational if you get good goat. I live in a place here in Brooklyn where you can get good goat. You know, we have a huge Caribbean community.
Yeah. And so every so often some
get the other end of the park. Pardon me?
I said every so often. Never mind. This is like
every so often what?
Oh, the goat gets loose. If a goat gets loose, by the way, it's a free for all. It's
a goat did get loose, didn't it? But it wasn't here in Brooklyn. Where was it?
I don't know. It was.
I don't know. But we have goats in Prospect Park.
It was on the Grand Central.
They bring
Park.
In goats to eat the weeds.
Yeah, they're
and,
very efficient.
They fence them in a large tract, and the goats eat everything in sight. And I think they actually brought them in for the first time. Is this possible? Am I not remembering correctly? They brought them in to eat the poison ivy?
Yeah.
Is that possible?
It's possible.
Yeah. After some huge storm where we lost some trees, it made it more amenable to poison ivy at the edges of the wood. And yeah, they had to bring in, I think that was it, they brought in the goats. But now they do them every summer. They bring in goats to some portion.
Do they have an armed guard?
I don't think, no.
Do they have a goat herd? I
have no idea. I'm sure they must have somebody who checks in on them.
Obviously, because otherwise the Caribbean community
only
would be
seen the goats once, and they were fenced in, and there was no security guard or anything like that. I mean, the park is pretty safe. I mean, I think the worst you would have to worry about is some kid, child, not goat kid. But human kid gets somehow in trouble by maybe even climbing the fence. It's a chain link fence, though.
No, it's okay.
It's a temporary fence.
A selfie with a goat is not the same as a selfie with a jaguar. Idiot.
Right. I mean, goats are extremely lovable.
Totally. And cute.
Yeah.
Okay, the goat was found in the Bronx.
Yeah, the goat got loose, and the goat, goat won.
And a loose cow was loose in Jamaica.
Well, when I first moved to Brooklyn, which is now over 20 years ago, I shouldn't say moved to Brooklyn, I should say moved back to Brooklyn over 20 years ago, people in Manhattan who just didn't get it, now they get it. They didn't get it. They said, why were you living where you live? And I said, because down the street is a place that makes mozzarella twice a day. And on the other end of the park, I can buy a goat. and I can still buy goat. Curried goat is a Brooklyn dish at this point. And by the way, if you're from the Caribbean, there's nuance. You know, there's Trinidadian curry, there's Jamaican curry, there's Bajan curry. Everybody's got their curry and their curry powder from their island. So you go to a grocery here, you have such a variety of curry powders, you don't know where to start. So you have to ask the lady who's standing next to you, which one do you buy and what island are you from?
Yeah. And then you have a selection. We just heard from a listener who said basically goats definitely eat poison ivy and poison oak.
There you go.
Very effective and efficient. Their poop helps the soil.
We're very sustainable here.
Sustainable parkland.
That could be an April Fool's joke.
It isn't.
We have a great park here. I don't know when was the last time you came to Prospect Park, but it's an extremely active park. I always wonder, there are so many three-month-old babies in the neighborhood, and the mamas and the papas. Actually, I always called another name for Park Slope is daddies with strollers. They all congregate in the park.
It tells you that last spring.
A year ago.
But, exactly.
There was a lot of copulation going on.
It's called spring?
I know. But I never think about it in terms of humans.
Maybe you want to start?
Spring
baby.
Woodcocks. We have yesterday. All the bird watchers went to Floyd Bennett Field, which is at the south end of Brooklyn on Jamaica Bay. And I understand there's some kind of museum, air museum or something there now, but people went there yesterday because the woodcocks were doing their mating swirls in the sky. I wonder if I could look that up on the internet. See it because I didn't get to Floyd Bennett Field yesterday, but I heard there was a big bird watching thing going on. People with their telescopes, whatever. It's a big nature preserve. It's actually a national park along the shore of Brooklyn. I forget what they call it. Does anybody remember what they call it?
No.
It encompasses all the way from, it's the whole shore facing the Rockaways. It's very nice. Birds, who knows what kind of critters. But I'm not eating those things.
Okay.
Yeah.
And no grouse and no quail?
They probably are. I used to go foraging along there, where there I know what I can pick. There's a lot of wild tarragon. I don't know why. All kinds of herbs. Let's just say all kinds of herbs. This time of the year, well, not in Sharon, but coming up very soon in Sharon, things are going to be popping up, including various kinds of cress. So if you live near a stream, I would look for the watercress, which somebody on television just said, and I'm saying it that way because I haven't done the research myself, I'm not sure I believe it, that watercress is like the most, it's the biggest power, nutritional powerhouse that you can eat. But you hear that about a lot of things. That's how the kale thing got going.
I know.
Yeah.
Holy thyroid.
So I don't know if watercress is the next kale. It's very possible.
It's just really... A digression is some friends had dinner at a really fancy place in Chicago, and that's noted for his food. And there was a lamb item on the menu, and what was presented was so different from the item on the menu and was so overcomplicated and so unattractive and just took basic, you know, the upshot of the tale, T-A-L-E, was, can we get back to just, because of TV and everything, the more complicated, the more steps. It's like, no, this is a really good tasting thing, and this is how to make it taste really good by leaving it alone. It's just,
well, this is a function of age, as Frank Bruni pointed out in a op-ed on Sunday. If you're over 50, you have one taste, and if you're under 50, you have another taste. And he's always talking about going to restaurants, and he wants, if you're over 50, you go to the same restaurant all the time because they take care of you, and you can depend on the food, and yada yada.
Yeah, it was ever thus, and it will ever be
and
thus.
It's the same with the kind of food. I mean, the older we get, the more simple we appreciate. Let's put it that way.
Well, if you have a club,
the older that we get, the more consistent we like.
Consistent, right?
And the thing,
which is why I find myself going, I go to the same places all the time,
right? And
but of course, I don't want to travel very much either. I like to be able to walk out of my house and go somewhere, or even get in the car in 10 minutes. I'm there, but you know, I find myself in a particular situation where my job for 35 years was to go to new restaurants. And I couldn't wait until that was over because it sounds like a dream job, but you got to remember that two-thirds of the places you go to are terrible.
Yes.
Right.
And then the good ones you never get to go back to.
Right.
I was going to say being
because you got to keep moving on.
Being a food critic is kind of like being a music teacher in the elementary school. You got to love music because the music you hear when you teach it is terrible, except for one or two people.
Yeah,
and,
well, there
and,
you go.
And food's right. The same way.
It is the same. I used to have this discussion with Howard Kissel, who was the late great. A theater critic of several newspapers, but we worked together at the Daily News for years. Like, who had the worst job? He who had to go to see terrible theater, or I who had to go and eat terrible food, or be treated terribly by some service idiot.
Right. No, it's
you know, and it was a toss up. Although, as I kept saying to him, I have to ingest the badness. You could just go to sleep. So now, of course, I want consistency, but it's also a function of age. It definitely is.
I'm all for age.
And now the early bird special, although I prefer to call it lunch.
Exactly. I just call it late lunch. Is it totally...
Or even early lunch. It's still, it's still the deal
lunch.
Of the day.
Still,
Jamaica Bay Wildlife Refuge, is that it?
Jamaica Bay Wild Refuge. Yes, but it is a something or other national.
It is. It is a Gateway National Recreation.
That's it. Gateway National Recreation Park.
Right. Gateway
so
National Recreation
Area. There's
all kinds
of activities in Gateway Park, including apparently bird watching. No, I knew about the
it's
bird.
It's Audubon. It is part of Jamaica Bay Wildlife. Thank you. This is Internet. This is New York City Audubon. U.S. Department of Interior's only wildlife refuge administered by the National Park Service.
There you go.
All other national refuges fall under the aegis of the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. That's pretty interesting.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
9,000 acres, 20 square miles, open bay, salt marsh, mud flats, upland field and woods, etc.
So I was a boy bicyclist, and so I know this stretch very, very well. Because there's a bike path that goes through it. And it's a sensational bike path. You know, you do see all kinds of wildlife along the way. So all of you bikers out there, come to Brooklyn. We also have a bike path, an urban bike path, from Prospect Park all the way to Coney Island. And it's a bike path that's on Ocean Parkway. It's designated. It's not in the traffic. It's on the park strip. Ocean Parkway is a true French-style boulevard with park strips and with little side roads. That's where the houses are. In the middle is this multi-lane Ocean Parkway, but it's called a parkway because there are parks. And there is a bike lane that goes all the way to Coney Island, over the ocean.
We have a nature trail, which is all paved, bike, and everything, that runs basically from Armenia, New York, and it will, at the end of the summer, run all the way up to Copaic, New York, and then over and into the other side of the Hudson River. All in all, it'll be like 48 miles of contiguous path from really
bike path?
A bike path and a walking path.
So
yeah.
Let me ask the vital question for me. Does it go up any hills?
It goes up hills, but the way it's designed in old railway beds that are all cut out, and they just work on them, they flatten them out. And, yes, there's some hills up and down. Have you ever been to in Poughkeepsie, the old railroad bridge? It is now one of the major attractions in New York State that they did over with concrete, and it's a walking path that goes over the Hudson River, and it's spectacular, and a bike path as well. Spectacular.
I'll walk over the Hudson. I have, you know, I live in Park Slope.
Yeah.
So even here, it's hard to do the hills.
We heard you can walk on water anyway.
That's right. We also, I had a friend who lived in Brooklyn and just loved ocean. I just loved that stretch of bike riding. Just loved
it.
Oh,
yeah. No, it's flat.
Flat and wonderful and beautiful. And
you're going through neighborhoods called Flatbush.
Yes.
And Flatland.
Hooray.
Those are Dutch names.
Before you went to Park Slope. All right.
And then, but Park Slope is a new name. Park Slope didn't exist as a name until the late 19th century. Late 19th century, of course.
All right.
Okay, so, also, by the way, when you have ragu in the freezer, you feel very secure.
That's right.
That was what I was asking originally.
Yes, I do. I feel very secure because I know I can even defrost it in the microwave, simmer it another minute. Usually, you have to correct salt and pepper when you reheat from the freezer, and it's spaghetti for dinner. Who can complain?
That's it. All right.
All right. Have a great week, everybody. And let's hope it's more spring-like next Monday.
Yes, let's.
Take care, Arthur. Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.